There are a number of scriptures, and the first one will be from the book of Genesis, chapter 31. There's seven pieces to read in all, but they're brief readings. Genesis chapter 31. And we read, I think, at verse 41. Genesis 31 and verse 41. This is Jacob remonstrating with Laban. "Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters and 6 years for thy cattle. And thou hast changed my wages 10 times. Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hast sent me away now empty. God hath seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight." Now the prophecy of Isaiah in chapter 1. Isaiah in chapter 1. Verse 7. "Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence, and it is desolate as overthrown by strangers. And the daughter of Zion is left as a cottage in a vineyard, and as a lodge in a garden of cucumbers, as a besieged city. Except the Lord of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like unto Gomorrah." Now, all the other pieces will be from the book of Psalms. So if you can turn back a few pages to Psalm 27, first of all. Psalm 27, verse 11. "Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. I have fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord." Now over to Psalm 94. Psalm 94. You notice the opening verses. Verse 1 speaks about the God of vengeance. Verse 6, the slain, the widow, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and so on. Anarchy and social disorder. Verse 16, "Who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Or who will stand up for me against the workers of iniquity? Unless the Lord had been my help, my soul had almost dwelt in silence. When I said, my foot slippeth, thy mercy, O Lord, held me up. In the multitude of my thoughts within me, thy comforts delight my soul." Now over to Psalm 106. Psalm 106. Verse 19 speaks about the calf, the making of the golden calf. Well, we'll start from verse 19. "They made a calf in Horeb, worshipped the molten image. Thus they changed their glory into the similitude of an ox that eateth grass. They forgot God their Saviour, which had done great things in Egypt, wondrous works in the land of Ham, and terrible things by the Red Sea. Therefore he said that he would destroy them, had not Moses his chosen stood before him in the breach, to turn away his wrath, lest he should destroy them." Now Psalm 119, we're almost at the end. of these readings. Psalm 119. And verse 92. Unless thy law had been my delight, I should then have perished in mine affliction. And the last one is Psalm 124, I think. Psalm 124. Verse 1. If it had not been the Lord who was on our side, now may Israel say, if it had not been the Lord who was on our side, when men rose up against us, then they had swallowed us up quick. When their wrath was kindled against us, then the waters had overwhelmed us, the stream had gone over our soul, and so on. And that's all that I want to read. And I'm sure you're just thinking it's a frightful number of scriptures to read, and that I'm going to be here a long time. I haven't read them because I want any exhaustive comment upon the passages. I have really only one thought, major thought in my mind, and I've read all the references, the relevant references, merely for the sake of completeness, not for the sake of exposition this afternoon. 2006 hasn't been an easy year for believers in God. We've had a lot to take. By courtesy of a gentleman called Richard Dawkins, believers in God have been pummeled by atheistic propaganda, by prejudiced intellectual snobbery. The implication is that in our modern world of scientific advancement, discovery and research, people who still believe in the God of the Bible are simpletons, to be generous, and halfwits, to be truthful. Belief in God, says Dawkins, is the root of all evil. He has just produced a book, much advertised, recommended by the BBC. And the title that he put upon his book is The God Delusion. It has become a bestseller already. People are being intoxicated by some of these ideas of Dawkins. Tell me this. Has our faith in God been misplaced? Is there any possibility? Did you ever consider it? Is there any possibility that we have been religiously brainwashed? Could we have been shortchanged? Have we blindly put our trust in a God whom we have never seen? Upon whom do we depend as we leave 2006 and go into 2007? Dear Christians, I want to speak a little word this afternoon on the God of the unless. You see, if it hadn't been for God, we would never have made it as far as this. And there are quite a number of situations in Scripture where everything held by a string, apparently. When the situation was poised precariously on the precipice of oblivion and disaster, and the only thing that saved it was God. Unless, just minus less this one thing less, dear Christians, if you take God away from us, the assembly at Ballingrey, the writing is on the wall, and the whole thing is finished. We cannot do without God, but let me say this, the God that has been with the dear believers every day of 2006, that's the same God that will be our guide. He will guide us across the midnight if it is his will, the midnight of this particular day, and take us into the beginnings of another year. And as long as we need him, he will be there to be the strength and the stay and the support of his people. There's an interesting little expression. This is why I've read so many passages. I say for completeness. It's not a common conjunction. In fact, it only occurs 14 times in the Hebrew Old Testament. And in 7 passages, it refers to God. And we have read those 7 passages today. And I just mentioned some of them. And as I say, it's really the one point that I have in mind, so that I'll not be extending the message. The God of the unless. How many of you Christians, if you were stepping forward here today and telling your little story, you could say, only for God. Only for the Word of God. Only for the Son of God. Only for the presence of God. Only for the assembly of God. I would have been gone. I would have slipped. Unless. Jacob. Jacob hadn't had a. Hadn't been going well in the workplace. We've already heard about. Some of Jacob's shenanigans. And. He got more than a full dish, a full bowl of his own medicine when he worked for old Laban for 20 years. I knew what it was for a part of my life to work for one or two awkward employers. One or two corkscrew characters. But I never had the experience of working for anybody just as wily as Laban. Jacob had his wages changed 10 times, he said. The contract had been broken as many times. He had been cheated and swindled. And I tell you, if ever a man had to work for an unscrupulous employer, a greedy, grasping boss, a selfish man, it was Jacob when he worked for Laban. Jacob wasn't behind. He managed to. He had a wonderful piece of genetic engineering, and he made sure that he had for himself a good severance pay, just all set up. We'll not say too much about that. He knew that old Laban wouldn't give him very good redundancy, so he set about his own pension scheme, and it seemed to work marvellously, for good or ill. I'll not go into that anymore, but he's out now. And Laban follows after him, and Laban gives Jacob a piece of his mind, and Jacob returns the compliment. And then he says this, he says, Laban, I was with you 20 years. You changed my wages. You're most unreliable and unscrupulous. He says, let me tell you, accept. That's my word. He says, accept the God of my father. And the God of Isaac had been with me. He says, you would have sent me away empty. Now as well. He says, the only reason I'm getting out of your employment, and I have something to show, he says, there's a God has been with me. And despite all your deception and all your mismanagement, despite it all, he said, that God has been king. Accept. This is the bottom line. Accept the God of Abraham and the God of my father had been with me. You would have sent me away empty. Laban, if I have got a great brood of flocks, and if I have a family here and my wife, it's no thanks to you. He said, it's just the God. He was, you know, maybe there's a believer here today, and as far as employment is concerned for you in the year that's just about gone, it hasn't been easy. Maybe you've been working for a very froward and difficult boss. Can I say that it's possible to have the presence of God in your employment, in an office? sitting in front of a computer desk, working on the factory floor or the assembly line, and mind you, it's not easy for a Christian to be exposed to the cut and thrust of business, and to be at the front line of industrial life. Dear Christians, many a believer would have gone down with discouragement. Only God sustained them, and preserved them, and strengthened them, and helped them. Jacob said, had it not been for God, he said, I would have been going out here with not a penny. Not a penny. He said, I'm a more prosperous man than you are. No thanks to me. No thanks to you. Except unless the God of Abraham and the God of my father. Isn't it great to know that God can be in the most difficult circumstances? And if you minus God, Jacob said, the story of the last 20 years, Laban, he said, if you could take God out of that story, he said, I want to tell you, that story would have had a very sad ending. But he said, it's going to have a happy ending because God is in it. And only because God's providence is there. The God of the unless. God's providence amidst all the deceptions. I'll go now to the prophecy of Isaiah. Isaiah looks upon a devastated country. I'm going to give the background to chapter 1 as the invasion of Sennacherib in 701 BC. Some have placed it in an earlier invasion. We'll not worry too much just about the historicity for a moment. Allow me that it's Sennacherib. The armies of the mighty Assyrian military machine have pounded the land of Israel. 46 cities in southern Judah have been stripped and destroyed. He said, the city of Jerusalem is left sitting like a shed in a field of cucumber. He said, when the cucumbers have all been stripped out of the field, the shed is just standing conspicuous. He said, when the Assyrians came out through the country and they took those 46 cities and villages of Judah, the only thing that was left standing was Jerusalem. And Isaiah says this. He says, Except the Lord of hosts have left us a very small remnant. He says, we should have been as Sodom and Gomorrah. He says, if it hadn't been for God, when the Assyrian came, as Baron told us, if you dare allow Baron to be quoted on the Lingry platform, the Assyrian came down like a wolf on the fold, and his cohorts were gleaming with purple and gold, and he reached out his hand just to strangle Jerusalem the way a man would strangle a chicken. As Bible language. God just gave him muscle paralysis and left 185,000 of his soldiers lying dead. Except the Lord of hosts had left us a small remnant, the whole thing would have been wiped out without a trace. Just like Solomon. I don't go into this afternoon, but I want to tell you, brothers and sisters, God will still judge Sodom. And we are living in a day when we are being told by British government propaganda that the sin of Sodom cannot be condemned. As long as we have an open Bible before us, it's our bounden duty as representatives of the God of heaven to condemn the abomination of sodomy. And what happened to Sodom historically will be repeated for sodomites who are unrepentant still. God will wipe them out. And Isaiah said, only that same God. Did ever you wonder why the assembly at the Lingry is still surviving? And you say, well, like we have a bunch of shrewd boys about here. We are not soft. Other places have cooled down, and other places have this, and other places have that. But we can manage things. And we can work it, and we are still... Listen, the only reason you're still surviving is because the Lord has allowed it. It's the Lord, only for the Lord. You take the gifted men of Billingbrook and subtract the Lord, and you have nothing left but a bag of brains that wouldn't take you... I don't know what the next village is. I haven't even the brains to do its name. No, you see, we need the Lord. He said, the only reason we have a very small remnant and the whole thing hasn't been snuffed out, he said, in our carnality and in our idolatry and in our materialism, he said, the devastation of God's discipline should have taken us from off the map. But he has still left a testimony for his name in the city of Zion and every little company dotted across the earth for the honor of the precious name of Christ. Every one of them is a testimony to God's preservation in the midst of devastation. God's providence in the midst of deception. God's preservation in the midst of disaster. Unless, except. Now, I think you have a fair idea of what I'm trying to say, and I say the rest of it very quickly. We're into the book of Psalms. And the very first psalm that I asked you to read was number 27. That very precious psalm where the poet tells us, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? I'm going down towards the end. He makes this plea in verse 11. He says, teach me thy way, O Lord, lead me in a plain path, because of my enemies. Verse 12, false witnesses are risen up against me. Verse 13, he said, I had fainted, unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. He said there was a time in the crisis of my experience when everything was so dark. He said I couldn't see any path in front of me. And I cried to God, teach me thy way, lead me in a plain path. And he said in the perplexity of life's future, I didn't know where to turn or what step to take. And so many things were against me. And he said, I felt that I was just fainting. I know the words are in italics, but we'll supply them just this afternoon. He said, I felt that I was losing inner strength. Unless, he said, the only thing that kept me going, unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. You know, did ever you feel, tell me this now, you be honest. Did ever you feel that you were losing ground internally? Did ever you feel limp spiritually? Maybe some don't know what I'm talking about. Did ever you feel that you were just about to give up and you didn't have any more of the internal resources that were needed for the battle of life? It's by fair common consent that this Psalm 27 is located. We cannot prove it, but we'll give it the benefit of the doubt just now, that the historical background of this psalm is located in the Absalom Rebellion. Talk about family disappointment. Talk about a boy that turned out badly. Oh, you say, well, David wasn't this and David wasn't that with Absalom. So be it. We'll not go into the whys and the wherefores, but his kingdom has been upset. His family have become a disaster. His house and tongues are wagging. He says, false witnesses are risen up against me, and the things that have happened in the kingdom, and this fracture of my family, he says, it has left people talking. And they all spend their opinion. And he said, I find myself, when public opinion was going across my life with a criticism just like a flood, he said, I have fainted unless. He says, the only thing that kept me going was this. I had within my soul the confidence that there would be the dawning of a brighter day. Unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. I don't know, again, a stranger here, but it could be in this little company this afternoon. There's some Christian in 2006 hasn't been a good year for you and the family. And the family disappointment and the family breakup is bad enough, but you see the way people talk. When you get into domestic troubles, people will really use their tongues to talk about you. And they'll all say what you should have done and what you shouldn't have done. And they can all give great advice when it's not their problem. You believers know that. And what I'm saying is this, that can be demoralizing. And that can be overwhelming to one of the Lord's people. He says, it got me down. And he said, I felt that inside I was sinking. And I was fainting. Unless... Oh, thank God for every time. These brethren that preach don't tell you about it. It's not to be publicly advertised. But dear Christian, isn't it great every time that God brought us back from the edge? If you have never been nearly away with it, I can tell you many a time I have been nearly down. Collapsed! Not wanting to face another meeting. Not wanting to do any more preaching. The thing overwhelming, just about to give in. What keeps you going? Well, you say, it's the help of the brethren. It's appreciated. What keeps anybody going is a vision of God. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Christians, put your trust in the God of the unless. Because circumstances that are just about to sink beneath the wave, he can rescue them at the very moment of drowning. Is the next one, 94, very similar in fact, in Psalm 94. I think possibly the background of Psalm 94 is not so much domestic breakdown and family and all that, it's social injustice. The psalmist, as I mentioned, indicated in the reading, He's concerned about vengeance. And he sees the fatherless and the widow being abused. And things in governmental circles are going very, very badly awry. And he cries out in verse number 4, verse number 3, O Lord, how long? He repeats it. How long? He said, how long are we going to have to watch this? The prosperity of injustice and the silence of heaven. And the righteous suffering and God doing nothing about it. How long? Then he cries out in the verse that I just want to mention, verse 16, who will rise up against the evildoers? Verse 17, unless the Lord had been my help, my soul had almost dwelt in silence. When I said, my foot slippeth, thy mercy, O Lord, held me up in the multitude of my thoughts within me. Thy comforts delight my soul. He said, I was just about to slip. It wasn't physical slipping, of course. He said, the problem was that my thoughts... And he said, as I looked at the situation, it was the multitude of my thoughts. Our little brains can play tricks with us, you know. Many dear believers get into trouble because we need the help of God to control our emotions. And we need the help of God to preserve us in our thinking. Many believers look upon a situation that may not be social injustice as we have it here. And they just wonder, how long is the Lord going to leave me in this situation? And how long is this inequality going to stay and the Lord never do anything about it? And it's the delay. It's the delay that really gets them disturbed. And in their mind, they begin to slip. As dear man says, in the midst of my mental slippage, and in the multitude of my, I think I pointed out over at Kinross one time, I'll just take a minute for repetition. The word for thoughts here is a word that's associated with the Hebrew word for branches. And you say, what link is there between thoughts and branches? You know, your old head goes like branch work. You see, one thought goes out there. Then that goes off there. Then that goes there. Then it branches over to another direction. And what starts here, and you begin to think, has the Lord let me down? And why has the Lord not saved my children? And why has this happened? And this and that. And it goes from A to B to C and branches. And if you don't watch where the branches sprout, you never know where it'll finish up. He says, unless the Lord had been mine help. He said, to preserve me in my thinking, and just to give me that peace, thy comforts delight my soul. He said, I just got that peace in the midst of life's delays, and if it hadn't been for the Lord, he said, I couldn't have borne the delay. I think for the Lord's people now, and right down the times, the ages, one of the biggest tests has been the test of waiting upon God. We get fidgety, and we get agitated, and God's not working with great enough speed according to our timetable, and we get all upset. Dear Christians, we go out into another year, and we just have to leave our times in God's hands. And only for him, the health of my body, the maintenance of my job, the preservation of the assembly, enablement to preach, enablement to carry on a little piece of oversight, whatever it might be, let us leave our case entirely with him, and we cannot do without God, the God of the unless. Now I think I'll mention two and then that I don't want to speak on, and then I will say just a word on the final one. You wouldn't see the word here in the passage I'm going to refer to now. We read it, but it's there, and it's well worth a little bit of a preach. It's the golden calf, and the people have turned into apostasy, and they've sinned against God grievously. And God said to Moses, he said, Moses, tell you what, he says, they're away with it. He says, you come out, and between the two of us, we start something new. It's a very attractive proposition. Oh, Moses says, Lord, I'm not going to start a new thing. No, they're your people. And Moses put himself between this apostate, departing nation and God. And you know what God said? I'm not going to preach this. He said, I would have destroyed them. Unless Moses, my servant, my chosen, had stood before me in the breach. He says, minus that one thing. He said, take Moses out unless. He said, I gave that man the promise of my pardon. And unless he had interceded, he said, the nation would have been destroyed. But I left. And then that other one that I'll not speak upon. Chapter 124 of the book of Psalms. Israel says, if it had not been the Lord that was on our side. That's the same word in Hebrew. Unless, disguised it, unless the Lord had been on our side, when men rose up against us, they would have swallowed us up just like a monster. Mind you, you know, and inscribed across the whole page of human history is God's supernatural preservation of his chosen nation. How many times have the Gentile nations not congregated and conspired to swallow up Israel? And even in recent history, I know unbelief and all that, and there's still great times of trial, but even Six-Day War in 1967 and plenty of other situations, the nations have conspired, and they thought just about to do it. And suddenly the whole thing just falls to pieces. You know why? Because God's eye is upon his people, and he will preserve them. And when the herald, and when the Haman, and when the Hitler, and when the Hussein, I don't want to make capital of the poor man's decapitation, when the Husseins and the little horn have all boiled with their fiendish fury, Israel will still survive, and they'll be able to say, unless the Lord, only for the Lord. It wasn't our military strategy. It wasn't our super secret spy system. It was just the Lord. Oh dear brethren, again I encourage your hearts with the God of the unless you trust him. Finally, the one that I will mention is Psalm 119. Very simple little text, and yet a very precious one. In Psalm 119, and in verse 92, the psalmist says, unless thy law had been my delights, I should then have perished in thine affliction. He said, I tell you, I have had a problem in life. I don't know exactly what his affliction was. There may have been something physical. He speaks about being like a bottle in the smoke. There seems to have been persecution. Princes have spoken against him. You could go through Psalm 119, and this man had an affliction. Life had been very distressing. What kept him going? He said, the only thing that kept me going was the promises of God. Unless thy word had been my delights in the plural. He said, I feasted my soul upon the promises of your word. And he said, in my affliction only. I would know very well. There are Christians here today, and if we were speaking to you privately, there may have been times in some of the lives of you dear believers when so much was against you, the only thing that kept you floating was some of the promises of the Bible. And you leaned hard upon them. He said, unless thy law had been my delights, I should have perished in mine affliction. It's great to be able to use the word of God. I remember a lady getting saved there, and she said to the other man, he said something about reading the scriptures. She says, do I have to read it every day? So the other man, and he says, you have to read it. You know, don't make Bible reading a chore. And don't get too much hung up on the aorist tense and the subjective genitive and the accentuation of disyllabic and clinics. Don't become too much worried about that. I tell you, when things are going wrong and things are going tough, God's people are sustained by the plain promises of God's word. Unless thy word had been my delights, I should have perished in mine affliction. So we leave it. More could be said, but it won't be said just now. You'll not forget, at least, you can't remember all these seven things. They tell me that a proper homiletician should only have 3 points. So I have failed by about 110%. But just leave that. You can't remember the seven of them. But you can remember this, the God of the unless. When things are just at knife edge, mine is God, they're gone. And we are gone with them. But thank God, he will never fail. He will be there. I could have said with our brothers, useful and helpful ministry, if I could put in a little title over when our brother Malcolm was speaking, I would have said, and it wasn't his main subject today, but it leads to it, that Ruth chapter 3 is the goel of the until. Because the man keeps coming, until. The goel of the until. And my little message has been the God of the unless. Dear Christians, let us trust him. Why should I ever careful be? Since such a God is thine, he watches o'er me night and day and says, all mine is thine. May the Lord bless his word.